In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 162. Brian Shackman here with you. John Senecal also joining us here. I think we'll start in terms of rundown of the show. We'll do some Yankees talk. We'll talk about Aaron Judge a little bit. We'll talk about his benching. We'll talk about the Sox schedule. And then we'll talk about John's little foray into minor league baseball outside of Hartford. John, what's happening?
Oh, I'm back from vacation, Brian. Back from vacation. I was off for like, I don't even know, like 8 or 9 days.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of baseball, a lot of youth amateur baseball, and then some minor league baseball, like you said. But, you know, lots changed in the last week or so. I was ready to burn the Yankee Castle down, and now they're starting to play a little bit better baseball, a little bit coming back to life here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're... You know, as of Monday, going into the week's games, they're basically tied with the Orioles, and it seemed like all the teams in the American League seemed to struggle around the same time, so that was good for the Yankees. There's two specific things, you know, I want to touch on. One is Aaron Judge. Again, we have 2 months left in the season, and he's already had his third best career season, and now teams are starting to treat him like maybe they don't want to pitch to him, and it just seems to me like it's anti-competitive, but at the same time, I don't know why you would pitch to him.
No, I mean, obviously, given his numbers and what he's doing, it, you know, harkens back to Barry Bonds in the early 2000s, what he's doing. But it's evident this weekend. I mean, the Mets kind of did it to him, too, working around him in their series, the first series against the Yankees. But seeing what the Blue Jays did, that's a foreshadow of what's to come if and when the Yankees make the playoffs. I would expect to see this if you're not going to step up and protect the guy. I mean, when your cleanup hitters are hitting .217 on the year and their on-base percentage is .277, and that's collectively across the season, whoever they're putting in there, be it Verdugo, be it, you know, Wells, who's been in there for like the last month, or Stanton, or whoever it may be. I mean, it's been a revolving door there between that and the leadoff spot. So the Yankees need to figure that out, and they need someone to step up. And obviously that's going to have to come from the team now that the trading deadline has passed.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, when you say that, I'm a big fan of sample sizes. The odds are that you're not going to get it,
right?
I mean, you've had enough of a sample size. Unless something dramatically changes, and what would you foresee changing, they're probably not going to get the production they would want out of that hole.
So. Well, I mean, think as Yankees fans, and you know, who follow the team closely, they would think it would be Mike Stanton. Giancarlo Stanton would be the one to fill that void after he came off the
aisle. At this point, you take Mike Stanton.
I would take Mike Stanton.
You take Mike Stanley, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is he has not done anything since he's come off the IL, and you wonder if he's still hurt or it's just your typical Stanton that he's gonna catch that 15-game heater and he's going to go on a tear, and everyone's going to be like, oh, it's the Stanton of old, and then next thing you know, he's on the IL for the playoffs. So who knows?
It's an interesting point because I'm like, maybe they could just get him off the radar, and then it feels like anything he does is a massive bonus, and then maybe that is what happens, because I mean, he certainly could wake up, because I hadn't even, when I said what I said about the sample size, I didn't even think of him because he's that far off my radar.
Well, and since he's come back, he's been an every other day player. I mean, he's not even playing every day, and he's a DH role, and he's coming off a mild hamstring strain. I mean, I go on and on about him. It's just it's unfortunate that he's a talented player, but he can't stay on the field, and if that you can't do that, you're not helping the team.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You know, I don't like Aaron Boone that much. I think he's boring. I know he gets kicked out of a lot of games and stuff. He's known as a kind of a player manager. So, I mean, it's been a couple of days in the rearview mirror, but I did want to touch on this benching of Gleyber Torres I don't want to give the because. I mean, just give me your hot take.
Well, I said it in our last episode. I don't think Gleyber Torres is going to be back next year. Everyone knows he's a free agent, and Jazz Chisholm's got the options. So, this is just another notch in the Gleyber Torres headboard. He does this over and over again. It's either he's nonchalanting a ball in the infield or he's not running out a ground ball in the infield. Well, this time it was he thought he hit a line drive home run and he basically stood there and watched it. But it's interesting what you said about Aaron Boone, that he's usually a player's manager, and that's true. And for what he did and how he handled that, he could easily have handled that non-publicly. But he clearly did that on purpose and made that a visual for all the cameras to see, in my opinion.
So why would he do that?
Well, I think it's about time that he's called out publicly. I mean, he's been called out in the media enough about his lackadaisical attitude, right? He's been called out enough of that, but he has not been called out by his manager. And he finally has been. I mean, he's tiptoed around everything when it has done with Gleyber. And finally, he told him, it's enough is enough. But then the weird thing is, he's right back in there, batting fifth the next day. And then the next game, he's batting leadoff. So who knows? Yeah. I mean, Gleyber Torres is a very talented player. But at the same time, I think the Yankee future with Gleyber Torres is clear.
So, you know, the one thing I will add to that, this is my only sort of hot take view that I think is worth sharing, is that some might have been surprised with Gleyber's post-game response, which was like accepting and seemingly taking responsibility. And I took that as 100% like other teams are watching. And if he doesn't handle it well and take some account, that's going to hurt him, you know, landing another good contract type
thing. Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think his agent got to him and said, like, shut blank
right
up,
especially given your especially given how you're playing this year. You're having a down year for your standards, and you're just coming off a point where, you know, Jazz Chisholm was traded for, and he came right out, Gleyber is like, I'm a second baseman, I don't want to move to third base. So right, there's that, you know. It's and fine, whatever, you know. The Gleyber experience has been interesting. It's been a shortstop, it's been a second base. What are we going to do with him? Where is he going to bat? When is he not going to ground out a ball? So I think, again, I think the Gleyber Torres experience is going to be coming to an end soon. But, you know, hopefully this sparks him and wakes him up, because listen, he's playing for himself, and he's playing for the Yankees, yeah, at this point, because he can only do better for himself if he does better. You know, it's
right,
just more.
And that's why I think Boone knew it. I think Boone knew that he you know, I think Boone might be smart enough to know he can leverage him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that had something to do with it. Let's move on to the Red Sox, because I you can look at any team schedule and point out, oh, this is key. But, you know, outside another series with the Rangers, the next basically 2 weeks are ridiculously important if they are going to have any chance at the postseason. Starting most directly as of Monday, the Red Sox, a couple games out of the wild card, the team they're directly looking up at is the Kansas City Royals. They have three in Kansas City. Then they have three at home against the Astros, who are arguably one of the hottest teams in baseball. They have another three at home against the Rangers, and then four on the road at Baltimore, and then they're on the road in Houston, and then they are home against Arizona.
Holy.
And Arizona right now is Arizona's back in the wild card picture, actually in the wild card.
Oh, they're one of the hottest teams in baseball, and they're getting healthy from inside, too.
Correct. So, I mean, and the Rangers, by the way, as bad as their season's been, they won the World Series last year. So the Red Sox have a massive challenge ahead of them. And my instinct is they're probably not up to it. But, you know, to go KC, Houston, Texas, Baltimore, into Arizona and Houston again is insanely difficult. So by the time we get to that final game against Arizona on August 25th, The Red Sox season will be decided, in my opinion.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, that is an insane gauntlet to run through. I mean, what your only chance at some mediocre team is what, the Rangers in that mix? I mean,
yeah,
the Rangers,
right.
and they're fighting still. I mean, they're always going to be tough, right? Because they got the team with a lot of talent. Wow, I mean, I didn't think their schedule was going to be... I mean, that is the exact opposite of basically the Yankee schedule, who just finished it up with Toronto, who welcome L.A., and then Texas, go on the road to Chicago, then Detroit. They have Cleveland, which is going to be tough for only three games. That's at home, though. And then they welcome Colorado at home, which they should walk all over them. And then the Nationals, they go on the road, and then St. Louis, they finish up with. I mean,
oh,
St. Louis. Yeah, so it's literally the exact opposite, because you could say what you want about St. Louis and Washington and Cleveland, but let's be honest with the divisions they're playing in. And Cleveland's a good team. They're a good team, but are they really a World Series caliber team? I don't know about that.
Probably not. Right. No. And so that stuff matters. And so, I mean, when I look at that schedule for the Red Sox, I'm not optimistic. And I know my nephew, Jake, is going to be mad. But and I went to the game on – and I didn't go to the game. I went to a 99 with my son, Max, on Saturday. We were just jonesing for a burger from there. I don't know why. And baseball is so cruel because we were sitting in our seats. The Sox went up 3-0. Then they had the bases loaded. The Rangers changed pitchers in like the fourth inning. And I'm like, this is going to be a romp. Then they didn't score any more runs with the bases loaded. Texas comes back and in two swings makes it 3-3. And then they took a 4-3 lead. And then the Sox lose 7-4. I mean, it's just like, it's crazy how, like, if they had gotten a single and then went up 5-0, I bet the game would have been over.
Yep.
I really do. I mean, it's insane how, like, little rally killers can really kill not just that rally. I mean, I thought the Red Sox were going to romp, and then all of a sudden they lose the game. But it was fun to go. I hadn't really, like, done a go to the bar and watch a game, like, watch the game. So it was cool.
Yeah, that's like a lost art as you get older, is going to an establishment for 2 or 3 hours and watching a game.
Right.
It's just, that's a huge commitment. And it's, you know, you also got to, it's a huge financial thing too. You got to sit there and you got to eat and you got to drink and you got to.
And drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had no problem with that. No doubt about that. Lastly here, again, John Senecal, Brian Shackman here, Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You had a vacation where you did a lot of youth baseball, but you did some minor league stuff too. What, you know, we obviously have the Hartford Yard Goats in our backyard, the AA affiliate of the Colorado Rockies, and they have arguably the last 3 or 4 years in a row, they've basically had minor league ballpark of the year. It seats about 7,000. It's beautiful. The field is perfect, and there's great concessions. And so I'm curious, you know, because I think of Portland, Maine with the Sea Dogs, the AA Sea Dogs, as one of the best franchises in minor league baseball. I mean, I've never been to the stadium. Like, what's it like?
Yeah, it's very unique stadium. So if you're a Red Sox fan, you're going to be blessed with a green monster like left field wall, which I think is probably bigger than the actual Green Monster. I don't have the, you know, nobody's sitting on top of it. There's no monster seats, but it is huge. It is an impressive wall. And the whole outfield is interesting, how it's, you know, like carved out up and down with the heights of the walls, a big wall in right field. And the bullpen, interestingly, is on the second level in right field. So you can like walk up on the top of the right field wall and the bullpen's right there, and you could stand right next to the bullpen and watch the guys warm up. That was really cool. But the stadium itself is definitely not like your brand new stadium. It's interesting because it has like the old round like seats behind this, you know, like the typical first to third bowl behind it. Then they got like a little bit of bleacher section with the metal bench seats above that. And then like you can see down the lines as the team got more popular, they just added like a big chunk of metal bleachers in the one spot, and then they added a big chunk of metal bleachers in another spot, and they just looked kind of out of place. But it was, you know, they were working with the crowds, you know, as the crowds picked up, they expanded. But, you know, not exactly like your gourmet food. The big claim there is the Sea Dog biscuits, which is basically like an ice cream sandwich, a cookie sandwich. But they sell them as Sea Dog biscuits, and everybody's buying them.
So it's not as nice as Duncan Park in Hartford, Connecticut?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it's older, obviously. It's definitely older. I mean, the feel is good. I mean, I love minor league parks, you know, but it doesn't have that minor league, major league feel that the Hartford Yard Goats Duncan Park has. It just doesn't. You don't have the city skyline out there. You don't have the, you know, the bourgeois luxury boxes. I mean, they have boxes at this stadium, but they're not like the Yard Goats. Like, you could literally walk up and walk into that luxury box. There's no separation between the seats. So it's definitely older, that's for sure.
Listen, if John Senecal's using the word bourgeois, yeah, I think we got to end
podcast. I'll tell you what was bourgeois was the person sitting in front of me had so much perfume on, Brian. I'm telling you, whoever that person was, and we worked really hard because it was a group of four people, and I think they were Canadian. A lot of Canadians come down on vacation to the Old Orchard Beach area, I've noticed.
Yeah, sure.
But, oh my goodness, it was not a
young, old, how old was she?
Well, there was, it was between two different women. It was an older woman or a younger woman, and the way the wind blew, we couldn't really feel it, so you you know. But I'm telling you, Brian, when I say hazmat situation, like literally, I almost passed out. I had to leave. We had to go sit. We had to go sit and find some like bleacher seats somewhere else because we were all choking out. It was bad. So
it cleared out your nasal passages.
Oh my goodness, man! It was a rough. It was a rough.
But it raises the question: if would you rather have that or severe BO next to you?
Oh my goodness, that is something because you know you're kind of confined, right? I was lucky that we were like in that bleacher part, but if I had spent like good amount of money for seats, like say you're at like a Yankee game, you got good box seats, the next thing you know, you're sitting next to B.O. Bobby and you know Stinky Betty. It's like, oh my god, dude!
I'll take Stinky Betty.
I don't know. I was choking on it. Hopefully, I don't have to experience the BO guy, but man, Stinky Betty was terrible.
Stinky Betty for the win. John, great stuff. And again, this has been episode 162 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.